From the Lynn Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 24th day of March, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com, out of Atchison, Kansas. Jackie Holland of Farm Futures will join us. They've just completed a survey of producers across the whole of the Corn Belt, and they've got some surprising numbers as it relates to what they think, a surprising number as it relates to what the 800 producers plan to put in the ground. Corn's one of them. There are others, too, along with soybeans and sorghum. You'll want to stay tuned for that one. And then as we close out our time together, we'll talk with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions to see just when spring might really arrive and when spring field work can begin across the Midwest. All on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today settled at $6.43. That was up 11 and a quarter. July, $6.23, 12 and a quarter higher. In December, up 8 at $5.60 and a quarter a bushel. May beans at $14.28 and a quarter, 8 and three quarters higher. November, new crop at $12.73 and a quarter, up 15 and a quarter. Soft red winter wheat in the harvest month, July, $7 even, up 26 cents. The hard red July at $8.34 and a quarter, 27 and three quarters of a cent higher. Live cattle futures were up 80 cents. Feeders were off $1.05, and the lean hogs up $2 and a nickel for the day. Mike Zuzlo now joins us from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thanks for having me.
The market rallied today. If it were Tuesday, it was definitely a turnaround Tuesday, but what a great feast Friday. How about that? What caused the feast in Chicago?
Yeah, interesting to note that the hard red wheat looks like it's going to close higher on the week, but the soft red is not. And that's something we're going to have to come back and revisit, I think. But to your question, Todd, I think the big thing is the question mark surrounding Russia and their export availability of supplies of wheat and corn and also barley and even oil seeds and their ability to supply the world market on the export front or not. And they created this situation, so it really makes one puzzled, and it's a very fluid situation. But there was whispers out there early this morning that they were putting a halt to their especially wheat exports at this point. They then came out formally and said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to raise the export amount by $70 a ton as far as what we tack on to it. And they also then said, we're not going to halt the exports, but we don't want to sell wheat below the cost of production for producers, and we're at the cost of production right now. And so it really left us with, in all practicality, you are halting your exports as you are saying this. And I think the trade was looking for a reason to find any reason to find some support after, especially in the European markets. We had not seen any green on the screen at all this week. In fact, we're down about 8% at one point in the black, in the European Paris futures. That was offset almost completely Friday with a 5 to 6 percentage point gain. So good volume on Friday, too, is the last thing I'll mention.
Yeah, the Russian thing was just weird, I believe, the way I read it, or at least the article that I read simply said the price of wheat, other crops have fallen so far, we're not going to sell them into the world market. And that's what you told me. It's just in a shorter version. But they're like, nah, we're just going to take it off the world market. And of course, the market's rallied. Is it a short-term rally, in your opinion? Does it change the mood in Chicago, which has gotten pretty sullen? I say Chicago, but I mean across the trade.
I do think it changes the sentiment indicators, because if we can close here, as you and I are talking, we're going into the close, and it looks like we're going to stay on the top end of the ranges. But I mean, you look at May corn, for example, you're at 645 area again. We haven't been there since the WASDE report back from March. And so I do think that this is what the market needed to generate a meaningful short covering. If you put a $70 duty on top of your wheat, if you're Russia, you get knocked out of the world marketplace. And so I think what the trade will want is to see good exports coming out of Europe, especially Europe, and affirming that European wheat market more. And then I think then that in turn will allow our weather market to play out in the hard red. And that's why I bring up the point that hard red looks like it's going to close well above last week's levels. Soft red, not so much. And I think that really does go back to the crop conditions.
After we're done with our interview here with you, Jackie Holland joins us from Farm Futures. Of course, they put some numbers out today. A lot of it predicated on sorghum going into the ground in those areas of Oklahoma and Kansas that have had some really tough hard red winter wheat conditions, just plowing that up and putting something else in that can handle the dry conditions. An increase of nearly 35% in acreage for sorghum. So I suppose that underlies this as one of those fundamentals you've been watching.
Yes, and I think also on the farm futures acreage numbers, if you're going to only put in 87.6 million corn and yet put in 89.6 on beans, is which their numbers were, I don't think you're done correcting the corn bean or the bean corn spread, I should say. We've done a heck of a good job of pulling premium out of that November bean complex down, 90 cents since the beef house meeting, and Dease corn is actually up about a nickel since the beef house meeting by my calculations. But it could go further if these numbers are correct. I'm not quite that robust. I'm at 90 million on corn and 88 on beans. So I don't feel like we have that quite of a big of a transfer from corn to beans. But boy, if we would, with the Paranagua pork price and soybeans that's dropped about $60 to $70 a ton just in the last 10, 15 days, we would really turn the tide, I think, in the beans as far as being the leader to the upside to really starting to be the leader to the downside.
And then along with those numbers, which are actually due out from USDA, these are the speculative numbers going into that report, the prospective plantings report. We'll also get a grain stocks figure on that same day. It seems to me with the impact of avian influenza on the size of the bird flock over the past year and the size of the cattle herd, which is way down, that there may be some issues related to consumption next week.
Very possible, but I would also say, Todd, there's a day of reckoning coming with these spreads because you have front-end corn up against the next month and front-end beans up against the next month, both trading 20 to 22 cents over in the front-end market. And that's indicative of the super tight stocks we have. And are they signaling something that this stocks report number could be giving us, i.e. that we don't have the supplies out there that we thought we did in the old crop? And so you're right, that is certainly something to watch as far as what you brought up. But the spreads are really wacky right now, given the fact that supposedly we're losing a lot of demand at this point.
Yeah, just the opposite of what I was saying, but yours would be predicated on a shorter crop than we actually thought we harvested.
Exactly right. Yeah, something's going to have to give because you're getting some mixed signals. That's an understatement of the day, I guess.
We'll talk again next Friday after the report. Should be fun. Thank you.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com. Earlier today, the folks at Farm Futures released their survey, farmer survey, that is, of acreage estimates for the coming growing season. We're now joined by Jackie Holland. She is a grain markets analyst at Farm Futures. Thank you, Jackie, for joining us. Tell me about the survey and some of the history behind it, and then we'll get to some of the really interesting numbers that you were able to tease out from the farmers.
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Todd. And I'll talk about our survey just a little bit. We survey our farm readers three times a year, and we ask them questions about their growing plans for acreage, as well as yield. And then we also ask other questions about marketing and just kind of other current sentiments that are at play in the farm economy right now. And with our latest survey, we kind of got our final look at grower acreage intentions. We got responses from about 801 farmers from all across the continental U.S., and they shared with us, you know, what they're looking at planting if weather works out in their favor right now this year.
You know, I have to ask up front, in the state of Illinois, and I don't know whether you have broken them out this way yet or not, was the rotation just about as usual? I know Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here, says it doesn't vary much from 54% corn and 46% soybeans. What did the Illinois numbers look like?
The reports that we got from Illinois and really Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana all show that rotations are going to stay pretty much the same as last year. But it's the acres and the plains that are really causing the biggest amount of fluctuation. And, you know, we think based on what our producers are telling us, that drought is going to be the biggest driver there. If you look at the drought monitor, you'll see that 31% of U.S. corn production is still in a drought condition right now. So, and because that area is primarily in the plains, we found that those acres are going to be where we see the biggest amount of acres shift away from corn into other more drought-resistant crops this spring.
That probably means, well, spring wheat, I suppose. That would be up north. But in the Kansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma areas, sorghum?
Yes. We saw a huge jump in sorghum acres, a jump that actually really closely mirrored the 2012 to 2013 jump in sorghum acres when the 2012 drought just was kind of unrelenting into that spring of 2013. So, you know, when I went back and looked at some of those patterns, it really wasn't a surprise to see that big jump in sorghum acres and the falling corn.
What do the numbers look like then?
For corn acres, we are projecting 87.7 million acres planted. For soybean acres, that is going to be 89.6 million acres. Market watchers will know that'll be only the third time in history that soybean acres surpass corn acres, but it's going to be by the largest margin under natural market forces. So that was really a key finding there. Winter wheat acres will rise about 3% from last year to 34.4 million acres. Spring wheat is going to fall down to 10.2 million acres. Durum wheat is going to fall from last year to 1.2 million acres. Total wheat acres are going to be exactly flat with last year at 45.7 million acres. And then sorghum acres are going to jump up to 8.5 million acres.
That's up 34.8%. And you gave me that figure in the press release. It's just incredible, that number. Let's do talk about some of these numbers so producers, farmers that listen to the programming will know that earlier in the week I talked to Ben Brown from Missouri University Extension and FAPRI, the Food and Agriculture Policy Research Institute. He's using a corn acreage figure that is very large, one of the largest I've heard, 92.5 to 93, and I think he leans closer to 93. Mm-hmm. Most of the trade is at around 91.5 million acres for corn, maybe as much as 92. Mm-hmm. And for soybeans, everybody's at 87.5, generally speaking, mm-hmm. or thereabouts. So that 87.7, even compared for the corn number to 91.5 that USDA has got and many of the trade have, is a really small number. What does it do, do you suppose, to the price of corn going forward, should that come out from the survey that USDA releases next Friday?
Yeah, I think it's going to take away a lot of the bearish momentum that we've seen in the corn and wheat markets. Because we probably aren't going to see that supply boost that we need to really kind of start to alleviate some of the tightness that the corn and wheat market have really been suffering through the last 3 years. So, for growers, I think, you know, especially growers in the I states, it's it's gonna be a really good windfall for them, because we're not gonna see these acres come into production on the plains like we had been expecting with some of USDA's earlier forecast.
Do you suppose, since you've taken the survey and some of the rains have come through, and I don't think that the plains have gotten that much, that your sorghum corn ratio will change there?
Yeah, actually, my father and mother-in-law live down in Oklahoma, and they sent us pictures yesterday of their yard that was flooded. I think the wheat crop is in bad enough shape. I think there's a really good chance that farmers are going to take the opportunity, if they get some of these rains, to possibly disc it in and plant crops this spring that are going to give them a better return than this damaged wheat crop would have. So I think that's really where we're going to see those sorghum acres thrive this spring.
Anything else I should ask you about the survey you took of your producers at Farm Futures?
Input costs were also a really important factor that are still driving farmer decisions. I think a lot of farmers were hesitant to pull the trigger on more expensive input crops this year, especially in areas where those input costs tend to be higher and the ground is really not quite as optimal as in central Illinois. So I think farmers are very conscious of prices potentially going lower. They've been selling at a more rapid clip. They are being more conservative with their cash management strategies. And, I think that's really reflected in these acreage outlays too. I think growers are hedging their bets on crops that they are sure they can get a good yield on and can cash a strong paycheck on when they harvest it this fall.
Thank you much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Jackie Holland. She's a grain markets analyst for Farm Futures. The organization has just completed one of its three annual surveys. This one asking producers what their expectations for planting rotations this year might be as it relates to acreage of corn, soybeans, sorghum, wheat, and other crops. On this Friday afternoon, let's check in with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Happy Friday to you, Eric.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again. I'm certainly glad it's Friday.
It's great that it's Friday, though. It's been kind of gray and, it's been wet. Can you tell me about this week?
Well, the good thing is we're far enough north that the really wet conditions that are running from like Oklahoma to West Virginia, that extends from the Red River Valley to the south all the way through the Ohio River Valley. We're north of all of the rain that's down there. And so there's a lot of 1 to 5, 1 to 6 inch rainfall events going on there, plus the severe weather that's over the lower Mississippi River Valley today. But that means we're tucked away in the cold, and it's something we can't seem to be able to defeat consistently. And I think a lot of that's due to the fact that, the jet stream is displaced a bit south and it's coming into the West Coast pretty low. And what I mean by that, it's hitting California, not Washington. And you just keep the net position of the jet stream far enough to the south, we are going to have a hard time bringing in some warmth from the south. And so, we're sitting here thinking, all right, we've really done a good job at defeating our longer-term drought issues. In fact, the newest drought monitor, which came out yesterday, showed we're down to about 50% of the land area in the lower 48 in drought. And remember, back in December, we were talking about 86%. So that's a huge improvement. But now it's this question of, all right, when does it break so that I can actually do something in the field? And we're all sitting here on our hands waiting for that to happen.
Yeah, it's not about spring arriving exactly, because my grass turned green this week, really green. I could watch it happen, in fact. But it's about when a producer can get into the field for them. When will spring arrive for field work?
Yeah. So, we think about a couple of stats, right? Here in central Illinois, we normally have to get past mid-April, probably about April 17th on average, to get past our average last frost date. Now, we can have frost in early May. That's not out of the realm, but that's what we're usually waiting for. We're waiting for the soil temps to come up. They're still hanging out in the low 30s in places. And we're just waiting on some good long duration sunshine, and we're waiting on this pattern to stop favoring cold in the west. I mean, just to remember what's going on in the west, right? Mammoth Mountain just recorded 800 inches of snow this year. If that number doesn't resonate, that's 66 feet of snow. You know, you've all seen what's happened to Tahoe. The reservoirs are full. There's tons of flooding, and the jet stream just goes south of all that. So we just keep kind of staying in this colder weather. And I don't think we're going to see the pattern blow open to consistent warmth until we get past probably, I hate to say it, but the next 20 to 25 days. So that's going to take us pretty far into April before we, you know, really see some sustained warmth around this area.
Is it involved with El Nino now?
Yeah. Well, you know, this has been a big question. And just in my travels this week, it's probably the number one question I've been getting asked. And that is, how fast do we go to El Nino? Because back in, the beginning of February, we were still talking La Nina. We were saying, it looks like it's letting go. It looks like it's letting go. By mid-February, it had just let go. And then we watched the results of that through March. And that's just been this persistent pattern we've been stuck in. Okay, that took what, 40 days to make a complete loss of one of the strongest La Ninas that we've ever had. And now we're staring at the, you know, the longer range statistical forecast, and they're saying there's a 65% chance that by as early as June, we could have El Nino-like behavior in the atmosphere and certainly warm ocean temperatures. Now, to be honest, if this El Nino behaves like all the others, I'd be really happy. That means a lack of extreme heat here. It means good moisture in this area for summer. So we need to see kind of what flavor this particular El Nino comes in with. But at least it's taken the La Nina risk off the table, first time in 3 years. And, you know, we keep going with that narrative, but I think it's going to be the most important one looking at summer.
First time in 3 years. The Argentines are really probably pretty happy about that. Likely late for this crop season. What do we know about South American weather?
What we know right now is that after, 3.5-4 months of drought in Argentina, they, in the last 3 days, had three events that put down 4 inches of rain. And it actually did more damage than it did good. There was hail, there were strong winds, and it's raining there again today. And the pattern down there has also made a bit of a change. We're now seeing almost every bit of Brazil's growing area showing up with a drier than normal signal for the next 10 to 15 days. And that's fine. It's not going to hurt anything if it only lasts 10 or 15 days because they're not expecting extreme heat. But if all of a sudden we start talking about, it's still dry there and it's mid-April, then we have to question about the timing, the normal timing of the end of the monsoon. And if the monsoon shuts off a little early, all of a sudden we went from this story of having a massive safrinha crop to now starting to talk about potential trouble with it. So that will be the top thing I'll be watching here over the next several weeks. It's us trying to get in the fields and them trying to get a crop finished. So we're not out of the woods yet with major weather issues that could be impacting the markets.
Hey, thanks much.
You bet.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. So you've heard from Eric that there might be a change that possibly could have an impact on the second crop corn. You heard also today from Jackie Holland at Farm Futures, who did a survey of producers this month and showed 87.7 million acres of corn only. And now we're going to talk really bummer during Commodity Week. So that's coming up next. Stay with us.